This is the Patty Vasquez Show.
Follow me on Twitter, Patty Vasquez,
on 720 WGN.
Some people see the revolution, but most only see the girl. I can lose my hard-earned freedom if my fear defines my world. I declare my independence from the critics and the stones. I can find my revolution. I can learn to stand alone.
Wednesday night already. It's Wednesday, right? I have a double check sometimes just to get myself all situated. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio and hope that wherever you are that you're happy, healthy, and safe. And don't forget, we'd always love to hear from you anytime during the show. You can call or text us at 312-981-7200. And that number again to call or text. And when you call, you'll hear the voice of Vivian Leneau, our producer this evening, in the not cloak of darkness, because we try to regulate the lighting in the producer's booth.
I really like this. I'm so glad you got that lamp.
Well, I can't operate at nighttime with full on fluorescent lighting.
Same.
I came in here and I was like, this is me. It feels personal. And you mentioned that you can't regulate the lighting in there, so we've adapted the
lamps,
the situation. So there you go. And the last I saw Senator Daniel Bisk on my Bisk. Where did that come from, Senator?
I've heard worse.
No, I'm sure you have. You ran for governor, so you heard a lot of things. Senator Daniel Bisk in studio with us. I know I had you on the show when you were running, but we used to have you on regularly during the Budget Crisis Corner. And yes, that was some fun times, wasn't it, for the state of Illinois?
It depends on who you were.
Yeah. I don't know if anybody had fun. Everyone seemed angry.
Bruce Rauner said he was really happy that whole time.
Did he really say that?
He said so many weird things.
So many
we don't have to talk
things.
About it.
No.
It's like a nightmare.
Well, one of the reasons I wanted to have you on tonight, we are approaching Governor Pritzker's first 100 days in office, an office that you yourself ran for and had a great campaign. A lot of people were energized by what you accomplished on the trail.
Thank you.
Some great videos. I mean, I would always check in on your Facebook Live video and catch you whether you were in Peoria or at a kitchen table in someone's home. It's a hard task to undertake, isn't it, when you decide to run for a statewide office?
It's an incredible experience, right? Mm-hmm. It's difficult and weird and confusing and fun and interesting and inspiring, and it was an incredible journey. I feel very, very privileged to have been a part of it.
And so when you were running, there were a lot of issues that were important to you as a senator who had worked very hard on a lot of different pieces of legislation. And, mm-hmm. and in fact, I mean, look, most of the men and women that go to Springfield are there to represent their constituents. They're driven by a passion for public service. What were some of the things that you were hoping to accomplish if you had become governor that you're seeing at least going in a certain direction?
Well, first of all, the thing that I'm happiest about in the Pritzker administration is that I believed and campaigned on and still believe that the number one thing we have to do is amend the Constitution so we can finally have a fair tax in the state of Illinois. They wrote the Constitution in 1970. It said we could not have a fair tax. That was a mistake then. It's a bigger mistake now. And it's the kind of thing that a lot of people, especially a lot of Democrats, have kind of said should be fixed, but no governor ever really threw their full power behind it for a really political reason, right? Changing the Constitution is difficult. It takes a long time. And in the past, a lot of Democratic governors would say, yes, that's the right thing to do, but I don't want to embark on a three-year journey. I want to do something that's going to get me a positive headline tomorrow, so we'll let it be someone else's problem.
Okay.
I thought that was a mistake. And I'm glad that Governor Pritzker has taken that precise same approach. He has said the number one priority to fix the state's budget is to finally change the Constitution and allow for a fair tax. He has led that fight, and I think that if we're successful, it'll be because of the way in which he has prioritized it.
And the way it's kind of being the message is being delivered. There are some folks who are there's a calculator. You can actually go in to Governor Pritzker's site, and you can put in how much your last, let's say, your last tax results were. And
who doesn't want a calculator?
You're the math guy.
Even I sometimes feel like a calculator is less fun than other things in the world.
Well, when you find out you're going to get $400 less out of your taxes, I mean, mine was $400 less per year when I did the calculator. Maybe I'm the dork. Are you saying I'm the dork because I looked at the calculator?
But are you saying the WGN does not pay you $1 million a year? Is that the lesson here, Patty?
Am I telling people how much I make by saying how much I would get back?
What you're saying is you're underpaid, and if the bosses are listening, Patty Vasquez should be a millionaire because she is amazing.
Yeah, I guess I just gave away about my salary, didn't I?
Well, that's the thing, and that's how the proposal works, that
right.
If you're making what most people make. If you're 97% of people in Illinois, you get a tax cut, you wind up paying less. But mm-hmm. hey, if you're the top 3%, you'll pay more. And that's how we're going to fix our budget.
And a lot of people, but they say, why are we going to punish the people who were able to succeed? And they're the ones creating jobs. And they'll be leaving. They're going to take their business somewhere else. We've gotten people who have called and said, I'm an accountant. I had a client who took 57 jobs with him and went to Texas.
You know, punish. It's such a minor punishment. You know, like, oh, you have the horrible tragedy of being a multimillionaire with a tiny amount less, right? If that's punishment, sign me up to punish these folks. Sign me up
to be out. Sign me up to be punished.
That's for sure.
Right? I would love to be punished.
Like I said, if the brass at WGN are listening, Patty Vasquez should be punished by being a millionaire. But you know, this is the opponents make it sound like, whoa, those wacky leftists in Illinois want to do something that no one else does. You know what wacky leftist states ask the millionaires to pay more? Wisconsin and Iowa and Missouri. Oh, and Alabama and North Dakota. This is just how it is in most places. And we've been tricked into being defensive and having to explain, what if we do this wacky different thing? How will people react? You know what? They'll react like they do in almost every other state where this has been on the books for decades. It's just fine.
Well, and Minnesota has a progressive tax, and they think their upper level of taxation is almost 12 or 13% for people who are earning that much. And ours wouldn't even be that big of a range.
I mean, the governor's proposing under 8%, even for the folks at the very top, right? So, you know, Ken Griffin, who's made enough money that he bought a $200 million condo in London. Oh, by the way, he's not paying Illinois taxes on his London $200 million condo. Anyway, the guy who makes enough money to do that, he'll still be paying under 8%. He could still go to Minnesota and pay more. He could still go to New York or California or New Jersey or Iowa and pay more. This is a reasonable, moderate proposal. It just stops us from being this wacky, weird outlier in a way that has broken the budget and made it impossible for us to run a state government.
We are hanging out with Senator Daniel Biss. By the way, what are you up to? Are you teaching again? I know I've heard you on the radio.
I'm not competing with you, Patty.
No. I'm not listening to the radio stations either. What just happened? What?
I am running a small organization called Rust Belt Rising. What we do is we train Democratic candidates in 6 Midwestern states, helping coach them on messaging. And we're finding these exciting, progressive, talented people running in places where they don't have a lot of help, and we're helping them get across the finish line.
Interesting. All right, let's talk more with Senator Daniel Biss when we come back. What's the name of the group you have?
Rust Belt Rising.
Rust Belt Rising. I like the name of that. Okay, more after this on 720 WGN. You're listening to the Patty Vasquez Show. It sounds weird to say I want to be punished. That's gonna be taken out of context somewhere, I'm sure. I'm laughing, Senator Biss, because a listener, you know, for the most part, texters, you know, they chime in with their thoughts, and they tend to be even keeled, and you know, sometimes you can kind of get some tone. But I don't know if it's just because you ran for governor, like out of the gate, someone's like, tell this jerk, and that's just the way I hear it in my head. Oh, hold on a second, let me see, I got it. Hold on. Tell this jerk the flat is flat. Every pays the same. Won't get my vote. How about spending what you get? Like Iowa has a balanced ledger. So
Iowa's top tax rate is almost 9%.
Which is double what we have right now.
Yeah,
almost
it's close,
double.
It's close to double. And like, their lowest rate is much lower. So Iowa is a model. I agree.
Yeah, let's do Iowa.
Let's do it the Iowa way. Ask the rich to pay their share and use that money to balance the budget, for sure. But I'll tell you, maybe this person with a perfectly appropriate question that is, I think, legit to ask, is kind of coming after me because I ran for governor. But I will tell you, when you run for governor, the text messages you get are way, way, way beyond those.
Oh, yeah. So, I thought you could handle it. That's why I don't always, display or share every text that comes through. But that one seemed like
that's a legit question. I mean, it's a question people have. It's fair.
It's fair. Well, so it's spend what you get is what the other thing that only spend. How about spending what you get? Which I don't know. I mean, it's a state that has a lot of responsibilities. And I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just nodding. I'll keep nodding. Yes, Patty, I agree. No, I mean, I will say this because, right, like, if you just sort of go out in the street and say, hey, we've got a budget problem, you think we should cut the budget to fill the hole, a lot of folks will say yes. And right. I think when a lot of people say that, they're saying, ah, this is Illinois. There's just tons of waste and fraud and abuse, and we got to cut that out, and we'll be fine. Well, you know, you read the budget, right? And the budget is one line item after another, you know, and there's like a few billion dollars here for schools and a few hundred million dollars there for early childhood centers and, you know, maybe a few tens of millions for mental health and then public safety and higher education. And you get to the end and you're like, well, where is the waistline?
Right.
Where did the fraud go exactly? And what you learn is that everything in the budget, almost without exception, is going to areas that people say are important. Now, that doesn't mean that every dollar is spent perfectly at all.
Right.
But there's not like giant sections of the budget you can just cut out and go on about your business. So when people say, should we try to make spending more efficient? For sure. Should we try to make government run better? Of course we should. Is that an essential thing to do? Yeah. But you're talking about trying to squeeze out an additional percent here or there. You're not talking about just slashing billions and billions and billions because, you know, typically the stuff that's in the budget, even though, yes, we should spend it a little bit more efficiently when possible, it's not really in areas that most people want to cut. And that means you got to find more money somewhere. And I would say, let's not go after the same working families who got hit time and time again. Let's finally ask rich people to pay their share, just like Iowa and Wisconsin and Minnesota. Oh, and like I said, plenty of much more conservative states as well already have been doing for a long time.
And, you know, people would be surprised at how quickly whatever they think of as we don't need this money in this pile over here. Let's sort of end that funding, right? Because nothing was more clear to me, and that was why I started going to Springfield after World Autism Day in 2015, which was early April. So it was, it was not that long ago, exactly the same time of year, because I'm getting my time hop and all the photos. You know, within 4 days of Governor Rauner announcing they were cutting $26.2 million to programs throughout the state of Illinois, which included the Autism Program of Illinois, there was a mom on the playground whose class was canceled. It was just 4 days later. So here's a mom whose child had autism and had just started learning how to wave in a social group. You'll be surprised at how quickly, you know, let's take $1 million out of this pile of money or these services. Why don't we just do, you know, it's always easier when you don't realize it. And people always accused me of like, oh, you want to take care of your retarded kid or you're, oh yeah. You think that people say mean things to you, Senator? I would get messages in my DM or my email saying, I'm tired of hearing about the retarded kids. You knew the risks when you got pregnant, you know, now we have to pay for your mistake. And
that's terrible.
Awful. So those are the kinds of messages that I got. But none of the cuts affected my family. They never have. We had a different, you know, whether it was because of my insurance or because of the school he was in, the programs that Declan was involved at. But it was the parents that were just on the playground who I knew right away were suffering. I thought, well, why is this happening? That's when I brought moms with me so we could talk, like be in the room and hear how senators and representatives talk about our families when we're not there, when they don't think we're listening. And that's the thing, is so much gets done without people realizing it does affect them fundamentally. You know?
Well, I think two things happen. Number one, a bunch of things get done without people realizing how it affects them. And then on the next layer is that a lot of things happen in ways that are incredibly confusing. And unless you're physically in that Capitol building, it's really hard to follow. And therefore, it's hard to have your voice heard.
Right.
I've started a podcast specifically because of this, because I know a lot of people who care about issues, who have opinions, and who just don't get what happens in Springfield enough to feel confident calling their state rep or their state senator to weigh in. The process is so confusing that it just shuts most people out, and that's dangerous, in my opinion.
I agree, and we always encourage folks to check to find out who their legislators are, because if you ask someone who their rep is, they'll say, if I ask who their state rep is, they'll say Quigley, right? And I'm like, well, that's...
Or Durbin.
Right. So, and that's fine. I get that, you know, that you're busy, and you have these elections, and you vote maybe party lines.
It's not just busy. Where's the information?
Right. OpenStates.org is one place that I go to, Ballotopedia.
I don't mean literally where's the information. I mean, where's the information in a way that an ordinary person who's expending a reasonable amount of time on civic engagement would figure it out?
Where should we put it? Where should it go? What should be available to folks?
I mean, I think there's a thicket of issues here, right? The district maps are so confusing that
that's
it's
true.
Very, particularly in a densely populated part of the state like Chicago, you know, one block might be in one district, the next block might be another.
Yeah.
So having maps that are more logical, I think, is definitely a help. I think, you know, I think the change in the evolution in news media has been really hard on Springfield coverage, right? It's far away from the population center of the state. So the Chicago press, as headcounts have thinned out, they just don't know what to do with Springfield anymore.
I know. They won't let me go anymore either.
You should just do like a jailbreak.
I know. Just, I'm going. I'm going to Springfield. You can't stop me.
Don't tell them.
Todd, do you hear that? I'm just gonna go.
Until you pay her $1 million a year, this is the threat.
They used to let me take the fan van down to Springfield and everything. But that's because
those were the days.
It's because it was a crisis. This is apparently not a crisis anymore. But no, I think that you're right. Part of it's coverage. But I also think that it's also at the grade school and high school level of what does it mean to be involved and to be aware. And I encourage people to find out who their reps are. Just go visit their office and say, hey, I live down the street from your office. Nice to meet you, you know, so that they can hold them accountable, too, when you see them at the grocery store or at church, you know.
But it's still hard to hold them accountable if you don't have a good information source about what's going on there, right?
Right.
Because the rep or the senator, they work in Springfield.
Right.
Right. So they can always run circles around you with procedural talk.
That's
right?
True. No, I've seen that. Yep.
You can say like a thing, right? Like, I want a budget. And they'll say like this blizzard of words that sound very empathetic. And then like, you're all like hugging each other goodbye and you walk away and like you turn around and they're gone. And you think, wait a second, what commitment to do a concrete thing that will make my life better did I get?
Yeah.
And that's sort of a move that works every time, unless both people in the conversation are on a level information playing field.
That's a good point.
Which we don't have.
And I always wanted to take listeners on a field trip to Springfield. That would be fun, but that fell through too. Because I'm not part of the 3%. More in a moment on 720 WGN.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that face. Even your emotions have an echo.
Now, Senator Biss, now that you've had some time to recover from your run for the governor's office, have you had a chance to see much theater in Chicago?
I was waiting for this interview to kind of set me in the right theatrical direction.
I've spent
the last year reacquainting myself with my children, who I've spent too much time away from during that race. But now
you're ready to get
rejuvenated and ready.
Well, one of the greatest theater companies in Chicago is Babes at Blades, and we have in studio with us. We have several of the cast members of their latest production, their biennial production of Babes at Blades Theater Company Shakespeare. And by the way, all the productions solely feature actors who identify as female, trans, and gender nonconforming. And that's a lot of words for people who are like, I get texts sometimes from people like, can't we just talk normal? And I'm like, normal to who? Normal for you? Normal? I never understand that. And I've always loved Babes at Blades. I love the work that you guys do. Sometimes it's historical, obviously, sometimes Shakespeare. In studio, we have Sarah Liz Bell, who is playing Desdemona in Othello. We have Brianna Buckley playing Othello. And Haley Rice, who is the script adapter, artistic director, and ensemble member for Babes at Blades Theater Company. Hi, everybody.
Hi.
Hello.
Excellent. There was another production was about the suffragettes last year, which was spectacular.
Yes, that was a good fight.
Yes, Yes. And there was a suffragette who knew jujitsu, Senator. I don't even know if you realize that, but it was amazing.
True story.
It's true.
It seems like the only way it could have possibly worked.
I'm not wrong. Exactly. So tell me, Haley, about bringing this to the stage for Babes at Blades.
Oh, well, this was actually set up by my predecessors, Kim Wolf and... And they, you know, every other year we do Shakespeare, and we kind of flip the script. Traditionally, Shakespeare way back in the day, only men were allowed on stage. So all roles, any identification, were played by men. And then we kind of, way back when the theater company started, decided to do it with all, basically, people who didn't get a chance to be on the stage during the Elizabethan times.
Fair.
So we started way back in the day with Macbeth, and we've done it every other year, you know, choosing the scripts thoughtfully of what would play to our strengths, being babes with blades. We want to show with fights, because that's what we do, and that's what people come to see. And also, you know, what stories we want to tell as well, you know, because there's some Shakespeare shows that definitely have fights, but I don't think would... click with our sensibilities. Sure. Let's put it that way. Fair. Taming of the Shrew.
It doesn't travel well?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't hold up in, it doesn't hold up the way it used to, those jokes. Funny.
We were talking about The Quiet Man. I don't know if you've ever seen the John Wayne movie.
Yes.
Similar problem.
Yeah.
So similar situation. Mm-hmm. So tell me, you know, as a playwright, you're a playwright, or adapter.
I adapt. I think calling myself a playwright would be giving me credit that I do not deserve. I just kind of edit the story in a direction that I think would serve the actors and the show that we're, you know, and the story we're trying to tell on stage.
Right. Well, in reimagining something in order to capture an audience's attention and with the sort of dynamics that are involved in the productions of Babes of Blades, how do you take that up? How do you take it apart first and then kind of put it back together again? What's the process like for you?
It's a kind of hacking kind of, I mean, it's a, think of it like a block of marble, and then you like chip away at it till you have a shape you like.
Like the budget, sir.
Yes, exactly. obviously, we keep
often
all the
compared to a block of marble.
Yes, unyielding. But yes, obviously, we also keep all the fights. There are things that we want to keep that, you know, strengthen the story, and then we chip away at what doesn't serve us. Mm-hmm. And then we have a clear, concise show to give everybody.
I'm excited to see this production. Now, we have with us Sarah Lisbell, who plays Desdemona. And how has that been rehearsing?
It has been truly just thrilling. It has been a while since I've been able to step in the shoes of a Shakespearean character, having done my master's in classical acting in London, and then I had just been stepping away for quite a while. So it has been absolutely thrilling. The cast is so supportive. We all clicked immediately. Coming to rehearsal is probably one of the highlights of my evening. Don't tell my fiance.
They get it.
They get it. Yeah, he gets it. And she is such an interesting character because she is one of the few women roles in that play. So right. I am a woman playing a woman, unlike quite a few of my castmates. Justifying her behavior because she is submissive and must obey her husband, but also with my own modern sensibilities of you're gonna treat me right, and just balancing out the way that she is supposed to behave with the way that she also feels so deeply. She loves her husband so deeply, and finding those moments of love within the moments of fear and anger and surprise as well has been fascinating to work with, and also really rewarding to work with this cast.
And that's the thing is finding the moments in between the moments and having that space to do it. And when you mentioned that you all get along, you know, I mean, sure, you can do a production with people where there's, you know, conflicts, but how much more joyous is it to be able to show up and want to be there with everybody?
Mm, absolutely.
You know, and playing Othello is Brianna Buckley. Brianna, how many productions have you done with Babes of Blades?
This is my first production with them.
Congratulations, then.
Thank you.
She's like, my first. I got the lead. Just saying. No. I'm just the general on stage. Just saying.
No, it's honestly, now I feel like such a crazy person now pulling this.
You're in theater.
It's my very first Shakespeare show, too. So
okay.
It's kind of my, it was my own personal project that I decided to bring on myself. Anytime I do something in theater, anytime, right, I decide to take on a project, I'm doing it for a reason. Mm-hmm. And so I'm always looking to push myself artistically, but also what story do I want to tell in this moment? And I've been very lucky and blessed recently to be in shows that are telling stories about strong Black women, being in cast surrounding that. And so when I got the opportunity to then be able to have my own take of how a Black woman thinks of a Black man and being able to play that, and then it being my first Shakespeare show, right? And then also having this wonderful human, Sarah, being my partner in that was just a wonderful gift all around. So more than that, I think I've just grown from this production. I'm very grateful for it, and that I've been the one that's been honored to tell this story, because I don't know any other woman that has played Othello that I can think of. So it's truly an honor, because even some of my friends are like, I have not I have not had that. I have not had that yet, and I really want that.
Oh, boy.
So, yeah, pressure, right?
Yeah.
But also...
Better bring it.
Right? And one of my best friends, who is an amazing director and actor, has also played it. So that's, like, additional pressure.
And are they coming to the production? Have they...
Oh, they have.
They've already come?
Oh. Yes.
And what did they think?
I got a double thumbs up on
okay.
it. Okay. Yeah. That's very kind. And not just like, oh, you're my friend, it's good. But as an artist, respectfully gave points that I was like, oh, you... Oh, great. I know you're for real about saying that you enjoyed it.
That's gotta be so gratifying. And, yeah. and I have to say that that Haley, you were like bursting with happiness just hearing the conversations about this production.
I'm grateful for this cast. This cast in every single one of them is so hardworking and talented. And we were just, you know, you hope that a cast works as well together as this cast does. And sometimes you get people who, like, slip through the cracks, who, like, give a really good reading, and then suddenly you get them on stage, and it's like, oh, you're not in the same show as everybody else. And that happens. And this sure. is not the case. This entire cast, top to bottom, especially these two souls right here, are amazing performers.
Oh, boy.
And I'm very grateful.
So they set the bar pretty high for any other cast to come in at. You're like, okay, everybody, this is the chemistry. This is the level of camaraderie we're going to look for.
I mean, they're just going to have to bring it if they want to work with us.
Exactly. This production of Othello is running through May 25th, Thursdays through Saturdays at 8 p.m. and Sundays at 3. The Factory Theater is located at 1623 West Howard Street. You can go to the website babeswithblades.org. And these are great ticket prices, $15 to $28. That's a wonderful evening in the theater. This is not too far from you, I think, in the Rogers Park.
Mm-hmm. Right on Howard Street.
Mr. Evanston. Are you still in Evanston?
Yeah, we don't believe in moving.
You don't believe? No. And I don't know that Mr. Evanston is necessarily a title that you want to have.
I was going to just ignore that altogether.
I have to run and get something to show you, by the way. I don't know if you... Did we see each other at the 4th of July parade last year? Maybe the year before. I drive the fan van, or sometimes I ride on top of it. I have to show you a plaque that we got that it just cracks me up, because I'm not entirely sure why we were awarded this. I'm going to have to run during the... Let me take a break, and then I'm going to run and show you a stupid trophy we got. More in a moment with our guests. We're hanging out with the Babes with Blades Theater Company. Again, go to babeswithblades.org. That's babes. Just exactly what you think I'm saying. Babeswithblades.org. More in a moment on 720 WGN. It's the Patty Basket Show. We're hanging out. Babes with Blades Theater Company in studio with us right now, and we're so thrilled to welcome the cast and the script adapter. Haley Rice is the dramaturge. Am I saying that right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I read everything. I don't say it out loud, so I can only assume that's correct.
Same way. You know what? Is there a word that you've like seen, read, and then when you come up to it, you can't say, like, I could not say statistics last night. Mm-hmm. Like, just in a regular conversation, because someone had texted it. So I'm reading the text. I'm like, I just couldn't get it out.
That's me with consciousness.
Ooh, that's a
you read that and you're like, conscienceness. I don't know what's happening here.
That's just an internal word. That's,
yeah, exactly.
That's true. It shouldn't be vocalized ever.
No. Yeah. I had to practice the word Adirondack, and I'm still not entirely sure I'm saying it correctly. She's like, I'm sorry. Just because I like buying the chairs at the Custer Street Fair, that's all.
Well, that's a very Evanston heavy segment.
Know your audience.
Now, my husband grew up in Evanston too, but really there were Adirondack chairs, and I was like, it would see the sign, I could not say Adirondack. Can you think in your mind how to spell that? No, I exactly. And I've been to the Adirondacks. It's a part of New York. I know. She's like, is that? There are certain words. It's not about that. It's about Babes of Blades Theater Company.
Words, as Hamlet would say.
No. And we have Brianna Buckley, who's playing Othello. Sarah Lizbell playing Desdemona. The production is running through May 25th, Thursdays through Saturdays at 8, Sundays at 3 p.m. at the Factory Theater, 1623 West Howard. And you can go to babeswithblades.org for ticket information. Now, Sarah, you said you studied in London, mm-hmm. when we were talking about Shakespeare. And everybody who's in theater has to have that sort of in the back of their minds. Like, if I had my fantasy, I would go study Shakespeare in London.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily say everyone, just because Shakespeare is not for everyone. And I mean that in the sense that just... It is the language is complicated, and it's just not some people's cup of tea. Just action movies are not some people's cup of tea, and that's fine. However,
those people.
But yeah, however, if you want to go and study it and see it and experience it fully, London is the place to go.
Well, and if you're going to have a master's in classical acting from the London Academy of Music and Dramatic Art, that's just fancy. It's very cool. I mean, like my mom still thinks I should go back and do things that I didn't do when I was younger, so that you travel and set out and pursue your dreams. And I know that you went to Michigan State. Mm-hmm. Yes. And what was your plan? You know, because when you tell your parents, I want to be an actor or, you know, I want to be on stage.
Yeah, I had like 5 degrees. So yeah, that was my life. Business, law, theater. I was a music major. I can't even remember what the other thing was. But I think ultimately what I had to figure out, what made my decision between theater and other things was passion versus just the love of something. Mm-hmm. You can love something, but having the passion for it and being able to like drive and have that drive to do it, especially theater, which is like so competitive sometimes and just a way of, right? I mean, you technically are competing for certain roles with people. It's just on you're the type of person that you are, whether or not you, take that in a positive way or a negative. I choose to do positives. But it was just trying to figure out what my passion was versus what the love of it was. And theater became a passion for me, being able to empathize with people on a different level. Oh, psychology. That was what the other one was.
The other degree.
Oh,
there we
are. Yeah.
Which I think lends itself,
yes,
to the craft of theater.
Oh, yeah. Those two hand in hand. I was in my psychology class all the time like, ooh, talk about this character. What's next? What are we doing? So that was really cool. But it's my passion. So I kind of go with it. Until it won't go with me.
Well, in Chicago is such a great theater. Haley, you've been a part of the Chicago, like so many different companies here, including the Factory Theater. I'm looking at the list. The Factory Theater, Circle Theater, Prologue Theater. What are the Chicago...
A lot of dead theaters on there.
Well, and that's the thing is that, you know, giving it a go isn't always the easiest thing. We're not the best mm-hmm. business people, you
no.
know, when it comes to performers, necessarily. I don't know if you know that about theater folks, Senator. We've got to have somebody that's a...
I would never make an assumption.
What have you learned along the way when it comes to, you know, the neighborhood theaters and having a Chicago, whether it's storefront or neighborhood place?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I grew up in this scene. I come from folks who are theater folks, so mm-hmm. I just never knew any better. And I've been to different cities, you know, and I've seen theater in London and New York, and there is the only reason to do this is because you love it. You know, none of us, unfortunately, are getting rich. We do it because we believe in it and we love it.
They're also not in the top 3%, so they would benefit from the progressive tax.
Please.
As a cut.
We also, you know, there's something honest and thoughtful about the theater in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And especially the last few years, we try really hard to take care of our own and watch out for each other in a way that a lot of other cities, broad generalization, I realize, mm-hmm. but in a way that I fear a lot of other cities do not. Mm-hmm. We have each other's backs.
Do you think a part of that is that, you know, whether you're in those other cities, we'll say that in a broad sense, mm-hmm. Los Angeles or New York, is that there's this always thinking you're going to be discovered rather than doing it for this. I mean, and not that there aren't artists who are truly putting their heart and soul in their productions in those towns. Obviously they are. But I like the reason I ask is because as stand-up comics, they go out there to be discovered, not necessarily to get better at their craft.
Yeah, perhaps. I think that it's a self-fulfilling prophecy in that, well, people treated me like this, so the only way I'll get ahead is if I treat people like this.
Okay.
Where in Chicago, people have kind of discovered that we can support each other and make good art and be successful in our ways. So...
And that's a great way to put it. I think that's why we support the local scene so much. I mean, there's a great productions, you know, people can go to the theater district, but we love learning about the neighborhood places. Mm-hmm. And tell me a little bit about the Factory Theater on Howard.
Oh, they've been around. The Factory Theater is a lovely friend of ours. They've been around for a long time as well, and they have their own permanent space now on Howard,
right,
which we are more than happy to borrow from them on time to time. You know, they have a good space. It's quality. They take really good care of it, and they take really good care of their audiences.
And there is something magical about theater spaces. Mm-hmm. The Gift Theater in Jefferson Park is this little 30. Have you ever been there? It's like 30 seats, but the stuff that they are able to accomplish in that space is wonderful.
Intimate is the word.
Now I mentioned before the break that I wanted to show you this plaque that we won, the Evanston 4th of July Association second place. I want to make sure that you all see what went. here. So that's the that was what we won for last year. That's it. You see, there's like a barely bunting on that. The WGN fan van. The Evanston 4th of July Association gave us second place motor vehicle 2018. Okay. So you have, and you've been to the parade, Senator. You know that there are classic cars. And they don't mess around in Evanston when it comes to doing up the decorations and the floats and all that stuff. So now, having seen pretty much every entry in the parade, would you say that that is...
All right, so I have two things to say in my role as shameless advertiser for my hometown of Evanston. Number one, they do put on a badass July 4th parade.
They do.
If you like that sort of thing, then... you should go to Evanston, and it stages from my front yard, so come say hello. But the other thing, let's just put two facts together here. Number one, this plaque of yours says that you came in second.
Right.
Number two, it arrived in the mail just now.
Just weeks ago,
probably
yes.
Right when the application fees are due for next year's July 4th parade. So I'm assuming that the brilliant entrepreneurs in the Evanston July 4th Parade Association sent every single person who entered last year a second place trophy right now.
I need to know.
So if they'll all enter this year's thinking they can win this time.
Okay. For those of you who perhaps received such plaque, you have to let me know. 312. Or if you know anybody that has received this plaque.
We're going to bust this scandal right open.
By the way, I also got two parking tickets with the van by my house because it's a commercial vehicle. And I got two tickets.
The Evanston Parking Enforcement Division takes this job very seriously.
It was in Chicago.
Profoundly humorless.
It was Chicago. Oh, and wow. I have to assume perhaps a police officer that's still angry that WGN doesn't carry the Cubs anymore. Not my fault, but I don't know that the station's going to let me have the fan van back unless I promise to bring it right back that night and not park it on my street.
Did you get booted?
No, I did not get booted. Oh, my God. Yeah. I paid for the entrance fee. I just didn't pay for the parking. I made it to the station. I was like, look, I'm already $115 out on this. How about you guys?
Did that make it onto your tax return?
That's a really good... hold on, let me go check. More in a moment on 720 WGN. Live in the Allstate Skyline studio, and joining me in studio is Senator Daniel Biss, and we also are welcoming in the studio Alderman John Arena from the 45th Ward over by Dare, the Northwest Side, including parts of Jefferson Park, Gladstone Park, Portage Park. What am I missing, Alderman?
Old Irving, Independence. Did you hit those?
No, I did not. Is Independence
Union Ridge up north?
And Union Ridge is like between Harwood Heights and Norwood Park,
yeah,
Norwich?
Yeah, right up there on the edge, on the northwest edge.
You have you've been the alderman for 6 years. You'll be leaving office later in May,
mm-hmm.
and it's one of those things. Now, Senator Biss, when you were leaving office, are there things that you try to do that you've been working on the entire time that you've been serving, and someone says, you know what, we're not going to let you do that anymore? What is it like when you're winding down the end of your term when you were leaving?
I mean, I left. You know, as we talked about earlier, I ran for governor. I lost the primary in March of 2018 and left office in January of 2019. So I had this, 10-month extremely lame duck thing. and it was, it was bittersweet and interesting. But when people know for that long that you're on the way out, it's harder to get a lot done, that's for sure.
Well, and I had wondered what it was going to be like for Alderman Arena as he is about to leave office in May. The citywide election results were not did not go your way in February.
Nope.
And there was a lot of it was fascinating because I've lived in the Northwest Side my entire life. I grew up in the 41st. Alderman Paczynski was my guy for a long time, and there was always your alderman's kind of you kind of figure who they are. You make jokes about whose street gets plowed or who's where the potholes. It depends on who you know. And before you was Alderman LeVar, who I never saw, I didn't even have any idea what his work was focused on, what he was trying to do for the community. And maybe it was partly me not going out and meeting him, but I never heard anything about him being at events or encouraging the kind of economic growth that I think I've seen in the last 6 years, and with a lot of resistance from the neighborhood. And the reason I wanted to bring Senator Biss in was because I heard him having a conversation about affordable housing. And one of the things that has been so hard in your path as alderman was talking about affordable housing. Mm-hmm. Do you think that the projects that you've worked on have been the biggest thing that people have like latched onto, that they've reacted the most strongly to, were the words affordable housing?
Yeah, I mean, I think that was the most visceral reaction. But I think what's interesting from the beginning, just talking about housing on the Northwest Side in general. I mean, we had opposition to splitting a 70-foot lot into two 35-foot lots with two single-family homes on it, and had the same dialogue about where are they going to park all these cars. I mean, this is the, you know, when you have your, that's, it sounds like a joke, but
right.
it was really a discussion. And so anytime you talk about housing of any scale, it was this kind of rote conversation about where are all the people going to, you know, how are they going to do their, how is traffic flow going to work? All this stuff becomes up to the surface. When you layer in, oh, some of this stuff is going to be sliding scale affordable, and yeah, that opened up a whole nother nerve, right? I came into office at a time when things were stagnant and everybody was demanding that we change the economic dynamics of Jefferson Park, of Portage Park, you know, Six Corners, around the transit center. So that, for me, was the mandate. That's what I said I was going to work on, and that's what I did. And you can't have the conversation about bringing businesses unless you're willing to change some variable that drives business activity. And the number of people and the amount of money people are willing to spend in a community and can spend is got to be part of that. And so you have to have a conversation about creating density. I just promised people I would do it responsibly. I wouldn't do it the way it had been kind of ad hoc approached. You know, we're just going to plop big buildings here and not talk about what's next to it. So I feel like I've always had a conversation about contextual, you know, expansion of density, and I've honored that. But it's very hard to kind of get past that first, wait, you're going to build how many stories there?
Right.
And, you know, and so it starts with that. And so what I saw was there's going to be resistance to whatever I do. Somebody somewhere is going to say no. And if we answer to that first, you know, first salvo of no, well, I would just be Pat LaVar, who I didn't want to be. I didn't want just to do the job for the sake of doing the job. I wanted to see businesses come to the neighborhoods. I wanted to see Six Corners back.
Right.
And I was willing to take the hits to do it. And, you know, I think the good news is we have five major developments around the Transit Center and Jeff Park that are either under construction or will be under construction, you know, this year. We have the Transit Center itself that's getting a $25 million, you know, investment. And then Six Corners, you know, we're looking at three of those corners being under construction, you know, hopefully this year, the Point being one of them, which, you know, we talked about earlier today. And, you know, it's the Sears site is now.
Isn't that wild that Sears, you know, is gone? That we've, I mean,
it is.
You know, which one we're talking about at the Six Corners? Yeah.
Yep.
It's just so strange how much things have changed.
Yeah. And it's just weird because it's only been like 6 months since that's closed. But
right.
Yeah, it's a big, you know, and a lot of people are like, oh God, Sears is closed. That's the end of Six Corners. I was like, guys, Sears has been closing for 25 years. I moved here 25 years ago. And, you know, I think it was a month into it, one of my neighbors was like, well, Sears is going to close any day now. What are we going to do then? I'm like, well, that's the longest going out of business sale in the history of retail, right?
Yeah.
It just closed. So it's like, you know, it's gone, but, and people were talking about, well, look at all the empty storefronts. Well, if something's there and it's just limping along, let it go, you know? I mean, I'd love to have seen Sears resurrect itself, but it didn't. So let's talk about what's next and how do we make it good for the community and what we want to see.
And one of the things Senator Biss and I have been talking about is where we get our information from. Like, how do we learn about what's going on in our communities, who are, you know, who our local elected officials are, whether it's the alderman or the state rep or the state senator. What is driving messages? Is it mostly social media? Are you finding? I mean, how much of it do you think is sort of in this bubble? And whichever bubble is the most, has the most people in it, are seem to be the ones that are carrying the day. Is that your sense?
Well, I think that the modern world allows for bubbles to get created, right? So when you're talking about like, hey, do we like Donald Trump or do we not like Donald Trump? There's two bubbles, and we all know what the bubbles are, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
But when you're talking about John Arena's election for alderman of the 45th Ward, there can be a moment where a certain topic, as you put it, hits a nerve, and then a, you know, kind of a fire gets lit and a new bubble gets created. And I don't think there's any way to avoid that if you want to actually do things. Right.
Right. Yeah.
If you want to just sit back and avoid all controversy, then you'll never piss anybody off. There'll never be any kind of echo chamber of people strategizing about how to take you out, and then you won't change anything for the better or for the worse. In the world that we live in with social media, once you touch on difficult, thorny, controversial issues, there's a possibility that you're going to really see those weaponized against you.
Right. And we invited, by the way, Alderman-elect Jim Gardner, because I was struck by the story that I read yesterday where the story about how Alderman Loreno decided that she wanted to call for a quorum because she felt like this
in the zoning committee for about the point.
Yeah. Right. The point, which was a development for senior housing. So, yeah. Having grown up and lived on the northwest side of Chicago and trying to follow the story, because, you know, for a while I was like, oh, yeah, the alderman seems like he's doing stuff in the neighborhood and there's a lot of restaurants coming in. And, you know, a lot of people had opinions about the bump outs or the bike lanes and things like that. And so we were kind of going along and maybe people had their opinions. But that 5150, in my life growing up on the northwest side, I never saw people get so angry with signs and filling. Mom and I couldn't get into the town hall meeting that you had mm-hmm. at the church. The point has been talked about for almost 6 years.
Yeah, I think 4 years. You know, we had an original proposal that was just retail, 100,000 square foot retail. Aldi's was the anchor there. And that went through a full public process. You know, we have a master plan at Six Corners that kind of informs some of the tenets of what you want to see development, you know, do.
Right.
And then ultimately, you know, with the kind of the volatility of retail in 2016, they couldn't get it financed because they couldn't find enough tenants to get to a place to finance it. So, you know, he had torn the building down. You know, a developer would never have moved forward. He had permits in hand ready to build. Nobody moves forward to spend over $1 million to tear down, you know, a fortress of a bank that was there.
Right.
If he doesn't think he's got a path to get this thing done. And then he comes to me in 2016 and says, I can't move forward with building this. I don't have tenants. And so we started over again, a robust community process, talking to people. I mean, it's been two and a half years since we started that. And, you know, we're at the point now where, you know, this stuff should just go through the zoning committee. It's not I was coached early on that if you want to get developments done, make sure veterans or seniors are included. And I tell you what, that rule is just out the window because, you know, 5150 is for veterans and disabled, and they're protesting that. And now I've got a senior building that is somehow controversial. I mean, you know, I don't know how you serve the masters that are being put in front of you.
Let's take a break here because I do want to know, you know, we're talking to State Senator Daniel Biss, who ran for governor and, you know, has been able to take in what, you know, people are going through throughout the state. Alderman John Arena, who is from the 45th Ward, about to end his term, turning the keys over to Jim Gardner. And I want to have a conversation about, you know, what are the ways to have, you know, to when you go to a meeting, what if you go in with everything that you're against it already? I mean, we're kind of always in a defensive mode.
Yeah.
And is there a way to have conversations anymore? So let's talk a little bit about that when we come back on 720 WGN. It is Wednesday night. We're hanging out in the Allstate Skyline studio. Joining me is State Senator Daniel Biss, a former candidate for the governorship of Illinois. He now runs, an organization called Rust Belt Rising?
It is.
Helping out candidates who are interested in running wherever they are. So you're like Michigan, all throughout the Midwest?
Right. Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, Indiana, Illinois, and Ohio.
So where can people find out more information if maybe they've thought about running for office?
RustBeltRising.com or check us out at, on Twitter or Facebook.
And also joining us in the studio is Alderman John Arena from the 45th Ward, about to end you were appointed the first time and then
no. 2011 and 2015.
Okay, so it was two terms. I couldn't remember. It's one of those things again that I feel like I've gotten more you know, involved and aware of what's going on in the neighborhood. I mean, I grew up in a neighborhood where it was just assumed Alderman Paczynski would be there forever. And that was kind of what I think that the feeling was with Alderman LeVar.
Yeah.
And so there was a lot of change under your administration, under your term in office. And a lot of people felt as though it wasn't going the direction that they wanted. They felt like, a lot of people have said that they didn't feel heard. And I also, whenever someone says they don't feel heard, I often wonder how much they're also listening, because they're already in I'm in the not area, right? You're not listening to me. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of a two-way street, isn't it, a little bit? Do you feel that way?
Well, I think it's complicated. I think, you know, when you represent, you know, in a city ward, 50,000 plus people, you've got 50,000 different opinions, and you probably, at any moment, we'll have 49,999 disappointed people in one way or another. I do think that the example of what John Arena has done here is something that we ought to think really hard about, right? Because in my experience, a lot of people I talk to have this attitude of politicians. They all pander. They just do what's going to be easy. They do what's going to get them reelected. They don't want to be all things to all people. They don't want to ever upset anybody. Why don't they get themselves a backbone? And you know what people then say? If only politicians stood up for what they believed in and were straightforward and honest, we would all love them. Right, so now look at John Arena. He runs for alderman in 2011, wins by how many votes?
30 votes.
30 votes in 2011. Runs for re-election in 2015, wins by how many votes?
1,225.
A landslide, right?
Comparatively, yeah.
You know, this is somebody who's in close races, the exact sort of person who ordinarily one might expect would play it safe, would take it easy, would duck from controversy. Instead, he listens, he makes up his mind, he recognizes the thing that he has decided is going to be most in line with what's best for the whole ward is going to be extremely controversial because it's got the words affordable housing in it, which is
third rail
flashpoint for people with a certain point of view. And he goes ahead and does it anyway. And the reaction to that is that he loses his reelection. And I think we need to study examples like that when we just are quick to say, why don't politicians stand up with backbone more often? The answer is that there are tremendous risks to doing it. And people who do it don't usually get rewarded for sticking up for what they believe in. They usually get punished for having stuck their neck out and offended someone. And I just think we should be honest about the fact that that's real. That's how it works a lot of the time.
And I feel like the conversations of almost everybody says 51-50. I mean, it seems as though there's this and again, for those who aren't familiar, 51-50 was a proposal. Is it still in the works as a bill?
Yeah, it's awaiting
mixed
income. Past zoning and planning, and it's awaiting award of tax credits by the Illinois Housing Division.
But the words affordable housing really strikes this sort of divisiveness. I understand, and some people are legit, talking about the density and concerned about their property values and things like that.
Those are the arguments that have been made
everywhere,
decades over decades, and none of them bear out in studies.
But the
challenge is nobody wants the facts and figures about this stuff. They want to go on gut emotion, and they want to relive. Like, we're rebuilding with the same bricks of Cabrini Green or Robert Taylor Homes, all the failures of public housing, which were failures because we divested from them. It's just like if you're single-family home, if you don't keep it up, you know, what happens? As things start falling off, it presents itself poorly. It creates opportunity for bad things to happen if you don't keep up a neighborhood. These are we don't build public housing anymore. This is all investor-driven developments that have accountability. Just like if you don't keep up your house, your mortgage company is going to come to you and say, hey, that's the collateral on your note.
Right.
The same thing's going to happen here. If you're not policing your hallways, if you're not monitoring your leases, the same thing's going to happen. And these buildings have more security than most four unit walk-ups that we have, where I have seen problems with bad tenants or bad landlords. Because it happens on both sides of it. It's all about accountability.
Let me, you know, I think we're going to continue the conversation about, and so the language, again, someone's texting in about public housing, which it's and this is what I was asking, like, how, you know, how do we have the conversation? Senator Biss, I know you have to take leave of us. It's gotten late.
It's gotten late.
And I appreciate your spending some time with us. Love to have you back sometime. What were you going to say before you go?
I don't think there's a wordsmith way out of this. I think we have to confront the fact that people seem to want to, in one language choice or another, defend segregation, whether it's racial segregation or economic segregation. And in my opinion, that's not okay. And in my opinion, we're going to have that fight and win it. We're not going to be able to find some other kind of language choice to somehow pretend that's not a real fight that needs to be had. And I'm proud of John Arena for trying to have that fight. I'm proud of the way, the stance he took. And I think he was on the right side of the issue, and I think he's on the right side of history.
Before you go, we have one listener that said, by the way, so I don't know if you like this comparison. Hey, Patty, hold on one second. I just got bumped off the screen. Patty, let's see. A politician who is honest, who gets in the office and does what he says he was going to do on his campaign, who doesn't shy away from controversy and does what's right for the people. You know, I think you're describing Donald J. Trump. More in a moment on 720 WGN.
This is the Patty Vasquez Show.
Follow me on Twitter at Patty Vasquez, CHI.
On 720 WGN.
Tomorrow, our very good friend Melissa Dupre is debuting, premiering her production of Sexomedy at Steppenwolf Theater. Congratulations, Melissa.
Thank you so much.
Your mic is on. Okay. Yeah, and you came in and we're talking about affordable housing. And I was like, I think that Melissa might be comfortable with this conversation as well.
Well, I was just applauding in the lobby, in the waiting room, when the lovely Daniel Biss, I'm sorry, I have like a political crush on that man, and I looked up for 2 seconds when I heard him say racial and economic segregation. I was like, wait, my fluttering heart, is that a radical progressive, or he's just happy to see me? And I look up and it was him, and I was like, I can't believe it. And so, you know, just thinking of that one sentence of really saying in any language, we should really be discussing and acknowledging that there is systemic oppression within our systems already that keep us without any kind of economic liberation. And one of that was always intentionally made for affordable housing, in the sense of we are going to allot for a particular kind of program based off of what we already cap in your salary and your economic liberation. So I just thought that was interesting, and I was appreciative that he said it.
I've been wanting to have this conversation, and I'm trying to figure out a way we should put a panel together, because this is a conversation that's going to continue to happen. Now, I have a lot of texters from my neighborhood. My neighbors are texting from the 773 about Alderman Arena. He's going to be out of office. So the conversation turns to, it's still about the community, still about our neighborhood, yeah. Whether or not you're in the alderman's office or not, you're still a part of the community and have an invested interest, and also know what the plans were for these projects, and they'll still exist past your term in office.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's 5 developments around the Jeff Park Transit Center that are going to move forward, including 5150, assuming that the tax credits come. You know, this is what we need in order to get the things that the disconnect is people. And some one hand would say, don't build any of that. We want all single-family homes, or we want, you know, low-rise, whatever. But also bring all the businesses, get the economy back to when everything was flush. Mm-hmm. And those two things are impossible to meet in the middle. You can't not change some dynamic in the local economy and expect the local economy to change to the positive. We've been slowly, steadily, you know, sagging down because there was an aura around the ward that you just can't do development there. Any development that was proposed under my predecessor was ultimately shot down. And so we kept kind of getting close and then falling back and getting close. And then everybody said, well, we need something to change. And then they elected me in 2011 and said, okay, go make this happen.
Right.
And so we looked at how to do that, and we engaged the arts and culture, and we brought people into the conversation in a way that had never happened before. You know, started communicating with people on a regular basis and got accolades for that. And then, you know, and then we go into the actual practical, okay, now we have to do something, and here's what it looks like. And, you know, whatever was proposed, there's not a single project that we worked on under my tenure that is going to be realized in the real world
exactly the way it was proposed on paper. Because that's what happens. People say that they want input on a project, but the folks that are hard and fast about that, really their only input is, I want to say no. And the problem is there's this whole range of other people that are saying, but I want to say maybe first, mm-hmm. so that we can talk about what it might look like if it goes forward. And that's where you take an input and you say, okay, is your problem about traffic flow? Is your problem about parking? Is your problem about height or what it looks like or what brick they're using or whatever it is? You take all that in a big flood of information, and then you turn it over to the developer and say, fix these problems, and then come back and represent. And what's really, you know, hard is that people don't look at version A, and then you get to version D or E or F that actually is moving forward for approval that addresses the concerns of that are brought forward. Except the ones I won't accept are the ones that say just do nothing, because that is not a viable option in my book. You have to do something. If you have vacant land next to a transit center and you say bring businesses, I can't put a business on an empty lot. I can get food trucks there maybe once right. or twice a week. You know, but there's realities of how you go through a process, but the opposition will boil everything down to, but I told you no. And somebody wrote, I think, in a text that you read earlier, you know, nobody wants this. These absolute concepts, I absolutely know that Joel Baum is a real human being who is disabled, a disabled veteran that lives literally two blocks from 5150 North Northwest Highway. He's a real person that reached out to me and said, I want to come down and testify. Can you send somebody over to help me get out of my apartment, basement apartment? That's a real human being that is a constituent I represent. So am I supposed to tell Joel and the hundreds of other people like him, sorry, we can't even contemplate this because somebody over here said no? I just don't think that's the place we want to be in terms of a society or in terms of a rational conversation about building our community in a reasonable way.
I think that it would be fair for me to address some of the things that do come up because, you know, there was a tone that a lot of people didn't like. They felt, and I don't know if it was, you know, because we've worked on projects together before. We did a production, I did a whole show at the Filament Theater, and we were able to bring in folks from the community, and I worked with Jill on that mm-hmm. and the band with Representative Martwick. I love being in the neighborhood, and everyone's experience is different, and maybe it's because of our opinions, but there are people texting. They're like, you know, he was rude to us. You should have heard the tone. You know, this is my personal experience. But I mean, you know that's not the first time you've heard that from constituents in our ward.
Well, no, but the folks that I hear that particular narrative mm-hmm. from are the ones that are they start with the harshest rhetoric. I mean, if you're coming at me, if there's threats to my family by people in the community, if the tone is just do what I tell you because I'm yelling it at you loudly, and I'm not protecting myself, I'm sorry, I get to defend myself when the tone from minute one on this on 5150
I was at the meeting and the
videos are out there,
right?
That wasn't me. My tone at the beginning wasn't to hell with you all, but there's people banging on the windows of a church chanting, you know, no Section 8 and Cabrini Melissa, Green.
Right, they were putting up signs like, this is Jefferson Park, yeah.
Where's the civility in that message that you want me to respond to and pat your hand and say, oh, I understand your position? I do understand your position. I absolutely disagree with it. And I have a right, both as a citizen, as a community member, and a leader in the community that's elected, to disagree with that. And when the rhetoric becomes so heated that it is threatening to me, I will respond like anybody else who's threatened.
And I think that had ripple
effect. I won't apologize right. for being defensive of my own my staff safety.
Right.
It
got very heated, I will say.
We have,
as you can imagine. Well, you know the Northwest
Side. We have
side.
The brick of hate, we call it.
The brick of hate?
Yes. The brick of hate was a collection of Facebook posts that are some of the most vile things I've ever seen written in a community forum.
Melissa, I have some screenshots that I was like, and it was folks that if their employers knew what they had posted, and it is some of them, I was just like, really? And I would message some folks that I said, you know, you might want to take a step back on this. You might want to delete that. I mean, look, I make mistakes and I get embroiled in these conversations or do things and say things that I wish I could take back. And I think that this was something that really brought a lot of anxiousness and even like people that I've known my entire life, the language that they were using, I was like, oh, this is taking a turn. That's why I've been wanting to have this conversation for a while. Let me take a break here. Anthony, I'm going to get to your call right away.
Yes, Anthony.
Anthony's been waiting. Anthony has been waiting. All right, more after this on 720 WGN. You know what's interesting is that growing up in Norwood Park, I certainly never would have thought that I would be sitting behind the microphone at WGN Radio. And tonight it's interesting because I'm hearing from my neighbors, the folks who live in my community of Jefferson Park now. We have on in studio with us Alderman John Arena, who's coming to the end of his second term. And there's a lot of high emotion, a lot of people who, and some people that are writing in support that, you know, they're disappointed to see you go. Others that are, waiting to close that door on you on the way out. So I want to say to my neighbors who felt that they weren't heard, that, that are frustrated and perhaps, there's still some animosity that is left over, and maybe there were exchanges that and it seems as though you had an exchange that was extremely negative. I ask that you continue to listen, and I appreciate your time. We're not all going to agree. I'm always fascinated when people keep listening to the show and they can't stand the sound of my voice. And people let me know. I was mentioning earlier with Senator Daniel Biss that when I was going to Springfield, people would message me and say that they were tired of hearing about retarded kids like mine. And it's just the
pearls.
I have a screenshot. I can show you one about somebody who said that I knew what I was. I knew the risks when I was getting pregnant. It's your problem. You deal with it. And it's not the way. I wasn't asking anybody for anything, because when I went to Springfield, there was nothing that directly affected us immediately. And I just know that there is a very slippery slope when it comes to raising any child when you lose hope. And the very first cuts they were making were for families with children with disabilities. Yeah. I was mostly worried about tragic results for families across the state of Illinois. And Anthony's on the line now. Anthony, I want to thank you so much for calling. And I know that you've been texting, and I know that you have some very strong thoughts on affordable housing. I want to introduce you to Melissa Dupre.
Hey, Anthony.
Hello.
And Alderman John Arena, what do you want to say, Anthony?
Well, I mean, I, for one, am 100% against affordable housing anywhere. I mean, to me, affordable housing is exactly that. It's what you can afford. I mean, how do you justify telling this guy over here on this block, because he makes a certain amount of money, that his rent's going to be this much, but this guy over here, because he doesn't make this kind of money, it's going to be half as much? How do you know this other guy with the money doesn't have, like, maybe he's taking care of a sick person, or maybe he's got student loans he's paying off? I mean, to me, something costs whatever it costs, and if you can't afford it, then you get what you can afford. I do not understand. You tell me one time that you've put affordable housing or Section 8 people in a neighborhood that the property values haven't gone down.
Well, I mean, where do you...
One time, if it's ever happened.
Sure, there's
affordable housing. There's Section 8 voucher holders renting all over Jefferson Park, all over Portage Park. You could look up and see the map on the Illinois State website. So,
but how is that fair?
Anthony.
You didn't ask about fair first. Let me explain.
I did
to you.
Ask if it was
you
fair.
You said
no. Hold on a second, Anthony.
Anthony
hold
let
on,
me
John,
finish.
Alderman,
it's
let
important.
Me. Alderman,
I can see how you got on people's nerves at the meeting.
Oh boy,
I want to answer the question.
Okay, so
you're not answering the first part of my question.
He did, but Anthony, he did.
I said, how is that fair?
No. I'm not sure what question we're on.
I mean, you could play the tape back.
You also said, name me one neighborhood where the property values didn't go down.
I would say Portage Park. I live near Dickinson Park in Portage Park. My housing value went from 215 when I bought it in 2000. It's the last appraisal was 430. There's an entire building. A number of buildings around Dickinson Park, close to Six Corners, that are Section 8 voucher holders.
Appraisal
and I'm saying that there's Section 8 voucher holders in my community right now, and my property values have gone up. So you asked for one example.
There it is.
And it doesn't bother
right
you
by my house.
That they're paying less for the same stuff you're paying more for.
Hold on.
You think that's
Anthony,
fair?
Anthony, that wasn't your question was, name me one neighborhood. So he named you a neighborhood,
well,
so that's not
well, no,
good enough.
I'll answer
well, the
it.
The property
I'll
values have probably gone up just because real estate's gone up, and I'm willing to bet you that somewhere near
but,
there
hold on.
That's not near Section 8 went up even more than yours did.
But Anthony, okay, so he answered your question, yeah. Right? So,
but it didn't go up because of Section 8. It went up in spite of Section 8.
Wait. But that wasn't your question. If you want to play back the tape, I can do that too.
Right.
But your question was, name me a neighborhood where there's affordable housing, where the property... So that was...
So property values went up.
I can guarantee you that the property value did not go up as much maybe a block or two away where there wasn't affordable
You don't know that for sure, and because you can't
but
just guarantee
you.
Me that.
That wasn't your question.
And neither do you.
I know it went up.
I'd love to address the question of fairness.
How's that fair? Yes, Anthony.
Why is it not fair that you can pay for what you can afford?
Here
why is that not fair?
Okay, hold on.
Where is the incentive to do better than you're going to be given everything?
Are you going to let anybody answer that question?
Okay, go ahead. Fine.
Okay. I'm gonna ask for like maybe 30 to 45 seconds of your attention, because I think the question of fairness is subjective, because when we're talking about who is predominantly living in these affordable housing in Chicago, yes, in the Chicago proper neighborhood, it's going to be black and brown communities who are systemically targeted. There are more likely to be targeted for school closures and for food deserts, not having access to the same kinds of resources any other family would be having access to. So the first thing you want to think about too is, would you rather pay higher taxes for community centers for families who are now homeless because they don't have access to schools, because they are now unable to get the same education as anybody else, are now unable to get the same jobs as anybody else, and now are actually living below the poverty line of what is reasonably affordable, not making a minimum wage in Chicago? Granted those factors, would you rather pay taxes for community centers that will house those families that will never be able to pay for home on a condo or mortgage or rent? Or would you rather have affordable housing allocated by the state?
Okay, well, allocated by the state. The state has no money. So whatever money is being given to these people is coming from taxpayers one way or the other.
Exactly.
Secondly,
whether it comes from the state or your direct pocket, it will be higher from your direct pocket.
Hold on, for Anthony. And
it shouldn't come out of my pocket at all is my point.
Well, then you should really be advocating
for
school closures.
I have to turn the microphone off just for a moment, Anthony, because I have to go to a break. Otherwise, I'm going to be in trouble, and we will get you after the news again, I promise. We have fired up the tech screen, the telephone lines. I want to let people know Melissa Dupre has been a friend of mine. She's an incredible artist. And actually was generous enough to help me through 3 weeks of a production I did at the Royal George Theater. I was thinking about that when I saw that you were going to be at Steppenwolf. I'm like, yes! She is premiering Sexomedy at the Steppenwolf Theater tomorrow. This is Sexomedy 2.0?
Yes, the second coming.
Sorry. So glad.
Don't you forget my tags. I am the queen of a good
goodness.
Title.
Oh my goodness.
I am the queen of a good title. You know, I've got a podcast out now.
You
and
do.
That podcast is called Hustle and Grow, Everything from Show Business to Hope Business.
All right, then. I love you. And one of the reasons I love Melissa is that not only is she passionate about the work that she does and for the people in her community, she is just one of the most, I think, she's very thoughtful. And I ask our listeners who are joining the conversation to, you know, listen to what she says from her experience, from how she's informed, not just from the people in her community, but the stories that she tells and brings to the stage, whether it's through productions at Free Street or her own work. And we will do this. We will work to do the same. And I say that because Alderman Arena seems to be really, I mean, the paragraphs coming into my text screen right now.
Yeah, that's
so,
me.
And I've had, so Anthony, we put on hold, We know what we should have done. We should have done like a meditation session for all four of us, for us in studio and for Anthony.
Oh, I don't leave the house without cleansing.
I can pick some music. Some, okay.
Could you do some some spa?
I think that would be a good idea for everybody.
Because I'm trying to remember where we left off because so many texts have come in. But we are going to
remember.
Anthony knows exactly where
That's
we
outstanding.
Are.
All right, Anthony, refresh us where we were,
he's
where we left off.
And he's red now in his car.
We left off on food deserts and the school quality in disenfranchised. But first of all, regarding food deserts, if there was money to be made there, these grocery stores would be there. Okay, it's that simple. It's not, you know, I'm not saying it's anybody's fault, but they're not there.
Oh, no, it is somebody's fault.
The people who live there. No, they're not there because they don't like certain people. They're not there because they can't make any money.
Okay? Why can they not make money?
Why can they not make money?
You think they just... Some of these places have actually opened there and then closed at a great loss. Why would they not be there if they're making money?
People can't really afford the organics.
Because people can't. Do you think it's because they can't afford it, Anthony?
Well, there's more than just organics at a store.
Well, but Anthony,
and let's be honest, a lot of the people shopping there are having their groceries paid for anyway. So what difference does it make what something costs?
What did you say?
Because it's a lead card, right? I watch it in the store.
I've stood behind people in line who come in there with $200 jeans on, gold all over their bodies. They get out of a $100,000 Escalade, and they're buying groceries with WIC cards or whatever they have, EBT cards.
Okay,
that is such a stigma and stereotype. I'm sorry, I have Link. I have Medicaid, and I am definitely not. I'm wearing my mother's jacket right now, who passed away because she couldn't afford. Medical facility.
I can attest she is not wearing an Escalade right now.
I am not.
Anthony, what was your question?
No, you can tell me this doesn't go on. I've been in line behind people. Let's go back to the schools.
I know what your opinion is going to be.
You're the hot chocolate type. Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you for that. Well, okay. So... First off, anecdotals of I've seen X is not statistically valid. You can't look at a system as broad as the Link system or any...
But it is public, abused.
Okay, of course there's abuse. There's abuse in everything, just like there's abuse by rich people with lots of money in the tax game. That doesn't mean that everybody who's rich abuses
our
the tax
system. Our new governor, as a matter of fact, of course.
Okay, so let's keep that up.
$15,000 to get their kids...
Let's talk about that college thing. I'd love to talk about that.
Hold on, can we... I gotta
how about...
Hold on.
Everybody take 3 seconds.
Everybody take a deep breath.
Anthony's brought up a lot of issues. Okay.
What's worse, somebody paying for their kid to get into college or colleges passing over higher scoring people for lower scoring people and calling it diversity?
I can't with you, Anthony. Yeah. I cannot.
And we have a text from the 773. Anthony is a racist. The more he talks, the more he shows his ass. I don't know if that's not good for the meditation music. That was a
whenever you bring out faults of somebody, you've got to be a racist.
Anthony, everything that you have said is rooted in opinion and nothing in statistical data. And
you're telling me that the Ivy League doesn't routinely pass over higher scoring students, especially Asians who have a class action lawsuit against the Ivy League right now.
Wow.
I'm not Asian, so I'm not speaking for myself.
How did we get here?
And they're taking,
by the way,
and
Anthony,
you mentioned people paying to get into college.
I didn't, but here, Anthony, just so you know, I read you the one that it was attacking you. And then there are others who are on your same page when it comes to keeping Section 8 or affordable housing out. Just so you know, we're getting all the opinions, and I wanted to give you a space to talk about it. But I want to make sure I get to Judy, too. Do you mind, Anthony? Do you have one more thing?
Yeah, no, I know. I appreciate you taking the time you did, Patty. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you so much, Anthony. And you know I'm always going to give you the space for it.
You're very good. I love listening to your show.
Oh, wow. There you go. Thank you so much, Anthony.
Thank you.
You needed to breathe a little bit, too. He's like, oh. Be safe, Anthony, okay? Thank you.
Likewise. Take care.
Thank you. Thank you. You too. Judy's on the line. Judy, I know you live in the neighborhood. How are you doing tonight?
Oh, fine. Thank you.
Excellent. What do you want to say?
Well, I just called, actually, because I wanted to thank John Arena for what he did for our condo, because we have like 3-4 people in the condo that take special service with the MV and the taxi. And he put a one of those
public benefit
he put the sign up on Lawrence Avenue.
I know.
Yeah, right on Lawrence. Yeah, mm-hmm. So he put that up for us, and I'm really grateful because in the snow when I come out the condo, I can't find the cab because the shoreline is gone. If there's no shovel, see, then I get lost. But I also wanted to ask you, is there a number that you can call just out of curiosity to know what is coming up in the neighborhood, like what stores, what restaurants? Because I tried to get the neighborhood paper for the condo association, but they want us to pay for it, but yet they give it to people in the neighborhood free.
I'd be happy to do the voiceover for that toll-free number of updates in the neighborhood.
Ooh.
I would love to have something like that because, you know, because I like to know, like, what's new in Jefferson Park, what's around my house, you know, because I have no idea because I only read Braille. And they don't have that in Braille, so.
I love it.
And I don't have a computer, so.
It's a great idea.
Yeah.
I basically just, you know, watch TV. I play the piano.
Can we subsidize radio time and be like, tune in at a certain time and a certain day to get all the neighborhood updates?
Ooh.
You know what would be, I mean, what we used at the ward office was email blast once a week to talk about what was new and coming. But in your situation, you know, one of the things we should probably consider is something like a podcast that people can listen to that have visual impairments or don't have technology in their homes to see email. That would be one way we could kind of do an update going forward. To do that. I mean, we tried in the ward office to be as much of a bullhorn about the new businesses coming and talking about events in our community, but you can never cover everything. And, you know, like she mentioned, the Natick Press is a catch-as-you-can kind of paper. It's not a delivery service paper. So it's difficult. She points out a really good point that it's really hard with the things that are going on to break through and find ways to get good information to everybody uniformly. That is one of the biggest challenges I think we have, despite the vehicles we have for communication. I mean, we have so many more now, and sometimes that's the impediment because you just don't know what to be looking at any one moment. And so it actually almost works in the opposite way in terms of giving you less information because it's hard to break through.
Oh, yes.
Judy, it was so good to hear from you.
You too, and I know you guys do a lot of good work, so. Mm.
Thank you for that. We often forget about who's excluded from the larger platform. So thank you.
Thank you, Judy. Have a good night. Look forward to talking to you again soon.
Hey, thank you, Patty.
Of course.
That makes so much sense. And, you know, even thinking about people, I was like, you're not on Facebook to hear what I just did? What?
Don't you know, why don't you know what's happening in my life? I post everything. 312-981-7200. Give us a call or text us. Some of you really are getting fired up in both ways now, too. So that's always really encouraging to hear that people really want to have a voice. And that's really the point of having these conversations. 312-981-7200 to call or text us. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll take Sue's call right out of the gate. I want to remind everybody that Melissa Dupre is going to be at Steppenwolf Theater. So excited and proud of you. And the Six Amity 2.0, The Second Coming.
That's a great tag.
It's the best ever. She's honest, she's authentic, and she's all Melissa. She'll be at the Steppenwolf Theater. It's incredible. I'm so excited. More in a moment. Where do we get tickets?
Steppenwolf Theater. It's going to be steppenwolf.org. Right on their front page, you just scroll down. I'm there because we open tomorrow, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at 8 p.m.
Thank you for staying up late tonight. I know you pulled an all-nighter last night getting everything done.
Oh, yeah. Still doing it.
All right. More in a moment on 720 WGN. It's Wednesday night. So, of course, we're talking about, well, now it's technically Thursday. We are having a conversation I've been wanting to have and we will continue to have. I had Ben Austin on several weeks ago talking about Cabrini Green and the myths and mythology, you know, sort of this bigger than life image in Chicago and worldwide about what affordable housing means. And we just kind of ended up having this conversation tonight with our guest, Melissa Dupre, who is performing her one woman show, her solo show, Six Amity 2.0, The Second Coming at Steppenwolf Theater. And I'm glad that you took some time out to come hang out. And let's not let it be this long again. It's been a while since you've been in studio.
It's been a while. I think we were both going, like, handling everything like superwomen that we are. But it's been so much fun being across the table from, what's this guy's name?
John Arena.
John Arena.
And John Arena, when before That's we me. Before we get to our callers, we have Sue and Victor. We'll get to your calls, I promise. You wanted to address something that came up?
Yeah, earlier it was, you know, in this whole conversation, it a lot of times it boils down to, like, why are we giving something to somebody who hasn't earned it, quote unquote? And I remind people, if you own a single family home, if you own property, you get something. You get a deduction on your taxes for your mortgage interest. You get a deduction on your taxes for your property taxes. So what we're doing is subsidizing home ownership.
So you're saying they shouldn't get those things anymore?
Well, I mean,
I'm kidding. But based on their logic. I mean,
right, based on
the logic is I'm not getting anything somebody else is. They're actually ignoring what they are getting. The benefits they're getting for being a homeowner, you're not by paying your interest on your mortgage. If we had more of that money, we could probably fill more potholes in the city of Chicago. I mean, those are things that's a reduction of tax revenue to benefit you, and that's money back in your hand. I mean, my benefit is a deduction of about $8,000 to $9,000 on my mortgage every year, plus, you know, the deduction of the $6,000 for property taxes that I pay. So that's a real gift back to me that I do nothing for, just by being me and having bought a house 20 years ago.
See?
I just think it's an important point for people to say, don't look at one side of the equation. Everybody's getting something. It's just who's lobbied for it and how is it.
That's what it comes down to, is a lot of people think when someone has something, it means that they're not getting something, or it's being taken away from them. And that, I don't know how we break that down, boil it down to something. Remember when President Obama gave that speech about you didn't build that, and that was all anybody heard? Do you remember that? Yeah. He was talking about businesses, but the rest of the conversation was everything that is around your business and has lent itself to the roads, the infrastructure, everything around that came from somewhere. In order for it, it was a much longer quote, but all anybody heard was
communist.
Right. and that was exactly what people heard. And it, you know what? If you go back, and that's why I'm asking, is there a different way to phrase affordable housing in the same way President Obama, you know, phrased something that people would, you know, hear their own way? And I don't know if it's possible to.
Well, I think you can. I think you can just call it housing.
Housing.
It's housing. Housing has. It's a broad range. I mean, that's, you have single family homes, you have multi-unit, you have downtown towers, but it's all just housing.
And let's not forget that there's like a 6 to 8 month, if you're lucky, waiting list to get on there. So it should be like
now
lottery housing.
We can't forget about Sue. Sue, I didn't mean to keep talking and ignore your call, because I know you've been on hold for a while. Hey, Sue, how are you doing?
Fine, thanks, Perry.
Of course.
You know, I don't know if it's too high of a density. The people don't work. They have too much time on their hands, or what it is, but it caused so much destruction where I grew up. The whole neighborhood went down. There were just too many problems. The murders started, and I'm not kidding. The little neighborhood grocery store man had his face shot off on Christmas Eve. Mm-hmm. That's when my parents got out. And some of the other people got out. You know, it's just a shame to see the old neighborhood.
So where was this? It sounds as though it was a project, right?
Well, that's what they put in. They're trying to tear it down now. Evergreen Terrace.
Mm. Yeah.
That's unfortunate that violence happened in your neighborhood. But I will challenge you to think about what other things would have caused all of that to occur. You know, we have gun violence, we have, you know, a multitude of other issues surrounding what that neighborhood had to go through, and not just it being this particular building, an affordable housing. Yeah. You're talking about this particular demographic that lives there. So when
we had none of that one. None of that was like that. I mean, we all stayed out and played hide and seek when it was dark, and when that came in, everything changed, the whole dynamic. It was like, what's going on?
Chicago went through a very large wave of opiates and drug wars. I mean, there was an influx of large amounts of drugs on the streets, and gang violence occurred because of a multitude of reasons within the own black and brown economy. So, like, there are larger issues at play when you're talking about violence that happened in a community. It did not come from affordable housing.
Yeah, and I think it's important.
Well, this all started like 20 years ago. I mean, my mom's been gone 10 years now, so this started back, I got married in 69. And then mom got out of there. And probably 74. It's a shame.
Sue, I do think that your experience and a lot of, we've had folks call in talking about Cabrini Green and a lot of other communities that did suffer when high rises went in. This is, I think that what we're unable to really wrap our arms around is how much that has changed. It's not, these aren't the kinds of situations, the kind of projects or developments that are in the works. But I think that is what informs everybody is our stories like yours.
Yeah, and that's...
Well,
they
want to tear it down now. Just tear it down. Just take it out.
Right.
Because they were infested.
We're not recreating what you experienced. This is distributed housing. The developments that The one at issue in my election was 5150, is 75 units, with only 60 of them being some measure of affordable. So you're talking about buildings that had hundreds and hundreds of units. Cabrini Green was 3,600 units in totality. And because of, you know, a lot of the things, as Melissa mentioned, is...
How many?
There was 3,600 units.
Okay. And that's, these are massive... to seven people deep in each one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. And so what those buildings were doing was saying, well, we're going to subsidize home ownership for the white Northwest side, and we're going to make sure that the African Americans, blacks, were segregated into another place. And so what policy-wise, this, you know, Blueprint for Disaster is a great book that illustrates this, where they were saying, well, we can't have that up north. We can't mix the races. So they concentrated poverty in big buildings farther away from work and economic opportunity, and produce the results that Sue was talking about. And that's not what we're doing now. We're divesting from a central building to scattered site so that you don't concentrate the poverty and recreate the past. We can learn from the past and do this, but if we constantly call up the ghosts of the past and say that's what we're doing when it's when it's false, that's what we have to continue to talk about and say, remind ourselves, scale matters, location matters. You know, 5150 is in walking distance to the transportation hub on the Northwest side. Getting access to O'Hare Airport for people who are working. I've talked to people who have to travel 2 hours to get from the south side where they can afford an apartment to get to O'Hare where their job is for $17
an hour. What was the name of that
book? Blueprint for Disaster.
You hear that, Anthony?
Here you go. Sue, I want to thank...
Hey, Patty, I say one thing about this college scandal?
Oh, Sue, can you hold on to the news? Do you mind?
Sure.
Okay, but hold on one second. But I do want to say this, Sue. I want to thank you for sharing your experience. Mm-hmm. And I want to make sure that we honor the fact that your family went through that and that the community did suffer. And I think it is a shame that we have that kind of history in the city.
That's trauma and unresolved.
Yeah. So I want to thank you so much because it's not easy to call up and to have those, you know, to share those memories was really important for us, Sue. Thank
you.
Yep. So hold on one moment. I can't do the college scandal thing. We can do that right after the news. I don't mind talking about that. I'd love to. We'll hear from Sue again in a moment on 720 WGN. The text line is on fire in the Allstate Skyline Studios. It's on fire. Melissa, come on, Patty, be brave. Ask all these other questions. There's so many things coming in. And Sue wanted to turn our attention to another topic that actually then Anthony jumped in on again. So we'll go back and forth. Alderman John Arena, about to wind down his second term in office in the 45th Ward. And, I wanted to have him in to talk about not just, you know, turn into a conversation about affordable housing. I was reading the story about what went down in City Hall yesterday. There were some, it seemed like a little bit of a
old school politics,
old school politics. Yeah. And I was curious about that. So maybe we'll learn more about the projects that were going on in Jefferson Park, Gladstone Park, Portage Park, Old Irving, and Union Ridge and Independence. When Alderman Gardner's in office, we'll see conversations with him as well as aldermen throughout the city of Chicago. We were talking to Sue about her experiences as a child living in a neighborhood that did have a project come in. And then, Sue, you wanted to talk about, we also have in studio with us Melissa Dupre, who opens her her solo show, Sexomedy 2.0, The Second Coming, at Steppenwolf Theater tomorrow, running through Saturday.
Yes.
And then hopefully extended, or?
no, this is the last three nights that I will put this particular version of Sexomedy up for the foreseeable future.
Oh, my God.
I will be going on to my fourth solo show, which is actually the third installment of a trilogy called Good Grief.
Okay.
Where I won an award, $5,000 from NALAC, which is the National Alliance of Latino Arts and Culture, to provide accessible mental health professionals and energy workers and therapists for any person that comes to the show that wants to have their first therapy session paid for.
That's outstanding.
So we're advocating for mothers and daughters to come see the show, because Good Grief, it talks about me losing my mom 2 years ago and how women, specifically women of color, are not afforded the privilege of grief. And it used to be so embedded in our culture with long-standing years of grief, like one whole year of black just to like take care of yourself. And we've moved away from that. So part of my advocacy around liberation and self-love and empowerment is also the ability to advocate for grief and advocate for mental wellness, not this, and break the stigma of mental illness. We're talking about mental wellness.
That sounds amazing. Congratulations on that.
Thank you. So just moving onward and upward and trying to like move out of the smut, as the first reviewer of my show called it.
What?
Yeah, the very first Sexomedy, a board member came to see it and was dogging the theater company. I came out of Teatro Luna. I was just like, oh, we're just putting on smut now.
Oh, boy.
It oversold by 100 people, and it's a Chicago Reader members pick. What are we talking about? Anyway, enough about me.
And that was wonderful. And then
it
some.
It really does, but not my kind. This is ridiculous.
You know what else sells are apparently entrances into colleges, which is what Sue
Great
wanted to
segue.
Talk about. Look at that.
Wow. That was good.
Sue, you wanted to talk about the college scandal as well. And thank you so much for holding on for such a long time. Go ahead.
Oh, pity, I'd hold on forever. Oh. Listen, you know, maybe I'm too jaded, but I don't care how much the rich pay to get in. They do anything they want anyway, so why the big blow-up over this?
Because I think I'm sorry to cut you off, but I agree, they end up doing what they want, but the problem is that we have mothers who have been incarcerated for just driving their children to better schooling that's not in their district. So while yes, they do what they want, there are mothers out there specifically like from disenfranchised communities that are being incarcerated in prison and penalized and fined ridiculous amounts of money for just driving their students to get better schooling. So there's a big gap in the equity there.
And the equity isn't fair. Ted Kennedy left a woman die, and then the people of Massachusetts kept on reelecting him. He was the king of the Democratic Party. Clinton was impeached. He is now the king of the Democratic Party. There's no equity between what's fair and what isn't.
I agree. I think that's and I think that's why a lot of people locked into the college scandal was, and you know, there's a great piece, and I wish I could find it, that someone wrote. She's a writer in Hollywood, and while she was trying to build her career and make money, she wrote for rich students. So, you know, to Anthony's question about how, you know, will they get in, they're not buying them the degrees. Well, in fact, a lot of parents who have a lot of money then hire people to take their tests, to do their papers. This woman said that she's written doctorates. She's written master's theses. And not just that, but once they graduate without the set of skills that it takes to be in the business world, then mommy and daddy can also hire an executive coach, and they have someone come and decorate their office so they look exactly the way they're supposed to. And, you know, they get to, because of their elite status, you know, their doors are open because of what their name is or what their parents have been able to afford.
Yeah.
So you're right, Sue. The rich do whatever they want. And so I guess whenever, you know, we have an opportunity to say, hey, I didn't realize how bad this was. Mm-hmm. Let's shed some light on it.
And
so I think that's why.
Bribery is a crime. It's like we're going to say, well, you know, we want these standards of hell. It doesn't matter what your income is. If you're committing a crime, don't we want people held accountable for the crime they're committing?
Right.
Accepting a bribe is a crime.
Right.
I mean, it's,
well,
it's
look at OJ.
Simple.
He couldn't even write a paragraph when they took him to trial.
So you're looking.
Everybody gets away with it.
So, but that's
not everybody.
Yeah. So that's why we got to stay diligent, Sue. We have to stay awake and informed. Thank you so much, Sue. You have a great night. Okay.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you, bye. Because Anthony was also texting in that, you know, is it what's worse, is someone buying their kid's way into college or bypassing somebody who has better grades?
How can he wave his hand about such a critical crime as bribing somebody to take a seat mm-hmm. from a more deserving student? The very thing that he says in allowing a student who has a lower grade, is he's contradicting himself.
And it's also not illegal. Right.
Yeah, it's not illegal. It's, you know, it's actually
built
correcting
into
the inequities of the past where you couldn't get into a school if you had the higher grades
right.
because a white person could get into that seat.
But that was fair. It was fair when only white students could get in. That was that was the system.
That was the system. Well, it was like, oh, how dare us do that? You know, but now he's saying, well, we should. It's not a big deal that somebody committed a bribe.
I think he's still upset about this whole thing that it would even equate to the kind of affordable housing issue that he has a problem with. It's not that they can't get in, those students with higher grades. We're talking about the scholarships that are given for diversities. Oh, we're talking about the scholarships that are given. I had perfect scores. I could not go to the college I want to because we could not afford it. And so when we're capping the amount of people, amount of students we are able to bring in, your scores don't guarantee that you're going to be enrolled. It's what you have to pay, and so they have to, schools have to allot for a certain amount of income disparities that is present in our American society that keeps Black and brown and minority communities disproportionately able to pay for college.
Absolutely.
And we have these conversations, and I know that people withdraw or get defensive, and I asked you last night.
And it's not about race.
I know. And I asked last night if you could listen with love. That's something that I'm encouraging folks. And so when Melissa talks or I talk or Alderman Arena, and again, some of you have a personal experience or you have a screenshot of something that reflects what your opinions are of somebody. In this moment, can we all take a breath and just listen and perhaps not feel as though something is happening to you personally or that anyone is saying or making passing judgment on you.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So when we have these conversations, it is astounding to me, and it saddens me that people get angry and lash out, and I understand it. Maybe mistakes have been made, or maybe, and I told everyone last night, I'm working on my opinion as we're talking.
Right.
So things might change. You know, maybe I did misspeak, or maybe
everything's nuanced.
Everything is happening in the moment, so we're working on it.
Patty, you're so gracious. You are so gracious.
I have my moments. I have my moments all the time. You can ask.
Lead with love. Yes.
Well, we all have our moments. I think there's no holier than thou here. There's nobody who hasn't.
Right.
No, you need anger management, buddy.
Well, I've been told that.
But, and yeah, go ahead.
But that's the truth of what you're saying is that, you know, especially in public life, you know, you try to, you know, maintain a facade and try to have an honest dialogue, but we're all human, and you know, I've made mistakes. I've admitted those mistakes when I've done it, but I'm human, and all I ask for is recognize that, and I acknowledge other people's humanity, and hope that we can have a conversation about how does a society as complex as ours work, and the hardest part is when people want to boil it down to, you know, some very black and white, no, not racially, but just an on-off
extremes.
Switch of these extremes.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
those extremes don't actually exist in practice or in nature.
No.
It's all this gray in between, all these different touch points that make things the way they are now. And a lot of people have told me, well, you know, I don't like that this is this way, and I'm doing something a certain way. Well, that's what the law tells us we have to do. So if the law is what it is now, the great part of it, it's malleable. Laws can be repealed, they can be rewritten, they can be amended, and that's the system. And Patty, you've spent time down in Springfield advocating for important issues that are important to a lot of people, but to you personally as well. And that's what you're doing. You're doing your civic duty of being engaged in the conversation and not railing against the moment, but saying the future's what we have to look forward to. Say, how do we take the laws of the past that are antiquated, and a lot of them built on some very faulty foundations,
right?
And bring them to where we are today as a population and as a city, as in a country.
And by the way, I believe it's Anthony again, and I'm not sure who he's calling young lady, but I'm going to go with you, Melissa. Young lady, you are aware of the fact that there are poor white people, and I think that...
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that, you know, we try to share an experience and a perspective that may not be as accessible. So, you know, keep that in mind as well.
Mm-hmm. And,
you
know. And 63% of the nation's users of Medicaid and government funding are poor whites. So thank you for reminding me that poor whites are the biggest link card in Medicaid users.
And when I say that some experiences aren't accessible, that's for everybody, right? Yeah. We're just not going to know what it's like to walk in somebody else's shoes.
Absolutely.
Right.
And so, again, absolutely. I'm just it's a conversation, and we will continue to have it. And then some nights we'll...
And affordable housing.
And affordable housing. And and sometimes we'll talk about... We'll do music and talk about food.
I love food.
Tell me something good when we come back. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Give me a call. Tell me something good. What's making you happy? What's making you smile? And I want to know. You can call or text us about that.
This is the Patty Vasquez Show.
Follow me on Twitter at Patty Vasquez, CHI.
On 720 WGN.
Tell me something good.
No matter what happens throughout the day, throughout your week, there's always got to be something that you're grateful for, something that makes you happy. And Vivian, that was the first time you encountered a kind of a heated conversation. It happens once in a while. We tend to keep the heated conversations for Friday nights, but it's kind of fun to stretch out a little bit.
Yeah, it was very interesting.
It was
very interesting.
So through all those, I hope that everyone that texted and called has something good as well. You know, they're not still in the middle of the night, like in an hour. I hope you're not like, another thing, Patty.
Yeah, some didn't make the cut. So yeah. Just so you know.
Yes, yeah,
so
we could not. There was a lot, and I thank you for that. I'm grateful for the engagement, for I'm encouraged by the fact that people wanted to have the conversation. So we're not going to do it all the time, but I do think this is something that we need to address and think about.
It was a great topic. Yeah. It really was.
I want to thank my guests for indulging me and having that. I know Melissa said I did not. Of course,
My spirit wasn't prepared.
We'll have you back too to talk about Free Street or anything else you want to. Your as well as Good Grief.
I'm pretty sure we'll get the same phone calls.
I'll make sure that we have the space.
Not
for
under
your,
my
for
watch.
Your productions. Tell me something
next,
good.
Next, Melissa. We're going to talk about voting rights in Puerto Rico.
Yeah. Tell me something good, Melissa.
Tell you something good. I feel like my mother is opening doors for me, and I often find that as hard as it is to lose people as they transition from this life to the next, I have to reinforce that they do so much work for us on the other side and having such a great time being an ancestor. So if anybody's out there having a really hard time with somebody they lost recently, just know that you haven't lost them. They're going to be doing some really wonderful blessings for you, and they're always near.
Oh, that is amazing.
I don't think anybody wants to follow that.
I got chills.
I know.
No,
if John, I'm going to make you follow that. Tell me something good, John.
Wow. Well, I mean, I'm in a kind of a transition point in my life with my career and what I do for a living. So, you know, when I think it was Judy that called and talked about kind of a small thing that I was able to do to help in somebody's life. I think that was that's the thing that I take away from this job, despite all the rhetoric of politics. You know, one of the things that was most rewarding is just taking care of those little things that people were frustrated with. They couldn't get through the bureaucracy or be heard on something. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of examples that I have, you know, in my heart that I know we did a lot of those kind of things. And that's rewarding for me, and that's something I'll take away from this.
How about you, Vivian? I like that. How about you, Vivian?
Listen, I'm just going to keep it simple tonight and say how grateful I am about this lamp that you brought to the studio.
Come on, warm lighting.
I just wish that people could see this right now, because if they see me behind this glass, I'm just vibing. And it's great.
We need to burn some incense in there.
I'll bring some candles next time.
A bean bag.
Like,
salt rock lamp.
Like, yeah, exactly.
I like that.
A little bohemian. Thing going in there.
Well, my something good is having you both in studio, and I want to thank Melissa Dupre for being so patient with me, and don't let so much time go by before you're back in studio. And so I need to use some of my time to talk about Sexomedy, because I want people to know about this production. production at Steppenwolf. She's going to be there tomorrow through Saturday. It is perhaps the final time she does this version of Sexomedy 2.0, mm-hmm. The Second Coming.
Yes, and I thought it was really important to modernize the very first Sexomedy, which was basically an homage to feminine rebellion, really trying to deconstruct this male gaze of how women were supposed to view their own bodies and really advocate for their own self-love and self-empowerment. And this one just kind of leans in deeper with that, especially when there's more politics being brought on our bodies. And also just the dating scene has gotten really weird with apps. And
are you on the market?
You know, I am. I've been single for a year this month, and I've tried just about everything, and I'm just, you know, I'm just as curious as everybody else out there. And I think that the curiosity of really exploring what love looks like in so many different forms and ways is important, especially when you're talking about, hey, let's listen with love, let's work with love, let's be more loving in the community. I want to make sure that we are exploring love on multiple levels, starting with ourselves, mm-hmm. healing ourselves, so that way we can become better partners, better lovers, better relationships all around with our communities, our coworkers, our bosses, everyone. And I really feel like part of that is having a really healthy relationship with yourself in all forms. So Sexomedy 2.0 isn't an hour and a half of just like raunch fest. It really does explore some of the taboos and stigmas and the societal norms that come with dating and sexual identity and your own sexual exploration within yourself, and how that can lead into deeper understandings of your own emotions.
Well, and it's I'm in and out of therapy, depending on
the therapist. Kick it out,
right? And I had a therapist who we talked a little bit about my childhood, because I was I survived sexual assault from I was 4 years old, and it's interesting, you know, in the different ways we come to understanding our bodies, because it took me a long time to be able to let anyone touch me. Mm-hmm. And so you're absolutely right that understanding ourselves and being whatever moment brings you to who you are now, right. And what's led to that,
right.
Is a lot to understand and to, mm-hmm. and sometimes even like forgive yourself or forgive anybody else.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And that's, mm-hmm. that's a heavy burden to carry, mm-hmm. in our bodies.
Yes. And yes.
Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah,
well, just speaking about that, we talk a lot about me and my polar mind. We talk a lot about that kind of communication. If you do not do that kind of work, especially around, you know, therapy or even meditation or even prayer and whatever spiritual outlet you have, there is no way you're going to expect someone to actually know how to navigate your own emotional or sexual landscape. It's right. very important right. that you come with that language and you are able to articulate that clearly with someone, so that way you are safe and they, in conversation with you, lessen the risk of any harm.
Well, and that's, you know, there was a study that about what men find is sexy in women, mm-hmm. and what women find sexy in men, right?
Yes.
And for men, like the first was just personal hygiene, mm-hmm. right? And I think that goes across the board for both men and mm-hmm. women. But what they find attractive is somebody who's vocal and is yeah. and lets you know that they're having a good time, mm-hmm. and is communicative. But women, we often are like, I guess this is happening, you know?
Right. And no, we should be going We should be going well beyond that conversation by now.
Men,
you know,
we have to do better than that.
Right. We have to do better. I posted something the other day in gathering stories for this play. I was like, if your porn searches do not match the kind of love you're making in real life, you're not living your best self.
Wow.
You are not being true to yourself, because they can't exist in different dimensions, in different planes, because like one, also like if it's illegal in seven states,
I don't even know how to answer that question.
Right, if it's illegal in seven states, you should be in therapy. Oh, absolutely.
Melissa, we're gonna talk after the show. Also, Patty, we got one quick break, 30 seconds, and we're gonna toss that over.
Don't look at my search history. Don't look at my search history. Sexomedy 2.0 at Steppenwolf Theater Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Go to steppenwolftheater.com.
Yes.
Yes. And Melissa Dupre will be back to tick off Anthony again in the near future.
He's still texting me.
Anthony's the worst Tinder match.
He goes, he
swipe left on Anthony.
He suggests that you date someone from Antifa. It's like, what is that even? What are you doing?
You know, I'm dating three people. Try it.
Oh, wow. Okay.
There you go. Melissa, I love you.
I love you.
And we're going to have you back very soon. And John Arena, we wish you the best of luck, and we'll see you again soon as well. Continue to have these conversations.
Thank you.
And thank you, Vivian. It's time now to turn the station over to Nick.
Thank you, Chicago.
Thank you, Patty. Thank you, Chicago. Thank you.